This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Cobb County officials today again defended the process they used to approve the new Atlanta Braves Stadium and insisted it's a good deal for county taxpayers. Cobb Commission Chairman Tim Lee was responding to criticism that the county's total cost liability continues to rise. Recently, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported its analysis had found $18.2 million in new borrowing expenses. Today, Lee said the return on those investments will be more than worth it, $132 million to the county in the first 10 years of the stadium and the mixed-use development around it.
This partnership between the Braves and Cobb County continues to be a good investment and a good thing for Cobb County.
But while Cobb leaders responded to questions about the project's funding, the Braves themselves have revealed the first conceptual drawings of the stadium itself. Derek Schiller is the Braves' executive vice president. I spoke with him about the design, which he said is aimed at making the game experience more intimate for Braves fans.
And so we've reduced the amount of seats by almost 10,000, and we've created more seats that are going to be closer to the field than even exist here at Turner Field.
Are you trying then to create the kind of atmosphere, let's say like Fenway, where the fans are so close, or are there unintended consequences to that? I mean, we all remember the Alou foul ball incident at Wrigley Field, for instance.
Yeah, so we've actually talked a lot about the outfield wall and other parts of the ballpark where fans may get really close to the field. And one of the things that we've determined is we do want to create a little bit of a buffer. So in the outfield, there will be a little bit of buffer between the outfield seats and the field of play so that we don't have any of fan interference issues coming up. But we do believe it's still going to be, call it a pitcher-friendly park as opposed to a hitter's ballpark. And I would say the outfield wall will be a little bit different as well. That's a notable differentiation, not even really reflected on the drawings, but we expect the geometry to be different and to have certain power alleys that make the geometry unique to that particular ballpark.
When you say the geometry unique, particularly with the power alleys, are you talking about something where the ball would carry more, or what are you looking at there?
Well, some of the areas in the ballpark, if you're a hitter, you would have to have the ball travel further in order to hit a home run than other areas. Whereas at Turner Field, while there is some differentiation in the distance to the fence, it is generally a consistent curved line. And so the new ballpark, we expect to have more corners or really breaks in the geometry, if you will. Not that you'd have any careening, and there's nothing that would be highly unusual, but something that's more similar to some of the other more recent ballparks that have been built.
But you did not include a hill like Houston, I would tell.
No, there's definitely not going to be a hill. There's nothing like that. I would say this is going to be more traditional in makeup than anything.
One of the considerations when you're talking about geometry is, number one, the orientation of the field because of, you know, what would be a sun field, or whether the sun would be in the hitter's eyes behind the pitcher during, let's say, a late afternoon or a twilight game. You've also got wind currents to think about. Certainly there are ballparks. The old Shea Stadium was like that. Wrigley is another. Were those considerations? I mean, were you trying to find in the orientation or the design specific sun patterns or wind patterns?
Absolutely. So a number of things that were studied, including sun studies and wind studies. In fact, because the ballpark is so closely associated or near Dobbins, we took some of their wind field data, and we applied some of those findings to here to help us with the wind studies. On the sun studies, we also did the same to come up with the orientation of the ballpark, which is almost exact opposite of where Turner Field is oriented. But given that orientation, as well as the roof line, which goes from about 30 feet wide to about 90 feet wide, coming from Turner Field to what we're proposing, we expect that more fans will have shade, and we won't have any issues with batters facing the sun. And one other unique aspect is you may even be able to get a glimpse of downtown Atlanta from one of the view windows throughout the outfield.
So the bottom line for, let's say, hitters, for instance, or fielders, where would be the sun fields on, let's say, a late afternoon game, knowing that that changes as the season goes on? And where would the wind be blowing? I mean, would we have Wrigley days, like whether it's blowing out or in, you know, you could see easy home runs or no home runs?
Well, fortunately or maybe unfortunately, I don't know how you want to put it, we don't have quite the wind effect that, say, a Chicago does or Wrigley. And the main thing that you study when you look at the sun is to make sure that the batter is not impeded, so that when he's facing a pitcher, that there is no way that the sun is going to get into his eyes. And so regardless of that, what normally happens in any ballpark configuration is you're going to have one of the outfielders, if the sun is up, that's more impacted than the other. And that is even true here at Turner Field.
Would the prevailing winds be blowing out or in most of the time?
You know, most of the time they would be blowing a little bit out and a little bit towards left field. That's what the wind data is currently suggesting to us. It does vary by the month and even by the week in that month, and we've gone to that level of detail. So we've studied that and tried to make a determination on what is the best configuration of the outfield wall as well as distances. Some of that is still being studied, so we don't have on these renderings the exact dimensions of the outfield wall, but we have a pretty good idea at this point in time.
I don't know whether you've gotten into this level of detail right now, but how many of the seats are going to be the kind of luxury boxes or things that would get lots of season ticket holders or corporate sales, as opposed to seats that a lot more average fans could afford, especially since you're reducing the number of seats to start with?
Sure. So at Turner Field, there's almost 50,000 seats. And if you exclude the clubs, or rather the suites, there's probably only around 300 or so that would be considered a premium club seat, a premium amenity type of offering. In the new ballpark, if you exclude the suites, you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 4,000 seats, and we've reduced the seat count, again, from about 50,000 to about 41,500. Now, not to alarm anybody with that, when I say that it's got a premium affiliated with up to 4,000 seats, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's an expensive seat. It just means that there is some level of additional amenity associated with that seat. It might be something small, it might be just a unique little club, or it might be the very high-end club that is somewhat similar to what we have here at Turner Field, known as the SunTrust Club.
Obviously, you've heard the critique, not just of baseball, but of many of the major sports, that the average fan can't afford to go to games anymore, especially if he or she is taking a family. Was that something that was a consideration when you were talking about the kinds of seats that you just mentioned?
Absolutely. And in fact, baseball, still to this day, remains the most affordable professional sport, and the Braves are absolutely the most affordable professional sports around. So our average ticket price will grow modestly over the next couple of years, but we're not going to see some sort of sharp increases from one year to the next or from Turner Field to the new ballpark. And we have a very much of a consideration for who our fan is. We have one of the highest family percentages composing our ticket buyers of any professional sports team. We're very cognizant of that and want to make sure that we have a number of different offerings for those types of fans that are looking for a very value-centric seat, or those fans that might be looking for something with an extreme amount, a high amount of amenities. The key is that we're going to have more different segments of seats with many different options serving a wider array of our fans, which certainly creates hopefully better experience and more custom-tailored experience for more of our fans.
One of the critiques of ballparks like St. Louis, for instance, with the developments around it, is that it took so long for those to take shape, that it took years for the village or whatever you want to call it around it to actually come into place. How confident are you that the satellite development, if you will actually go along with the ballpark?
There's two major differences between, take a St. Louis or any of the others that may have a development associated with them, and ours. The first is that most of those cases, maybe even all of them that I'm familiar with in baseball, were redevelopments of existing areas, which creates a whole lot of challenge unto themselves in getting those entitled in the right way, ownership in the right way, and other things. The second is really that ownership piece. And in that, the teams in the past have rarely been the owners or the master developers of that development. They're relying on some other real estate entity to do that. In our case here, the Atlanta Braves are the one that purchased the 83 acres. The Atlanta Braves are the ones that are developing the mixed-use development and working with Cobb County on the ballpark itself. And so ultimately, the team is responsible and very motivated to get both the development and the ballpark up and ready, operational at the exact same time, ready for our fans for the April 2017 start of the season.
How confident are you, though, that you can do that? That timetable is one that couldn't have been met by most of the other stadium developments that start from scratch.
Well, most of the delays in some of the other stadiums and situations that you might be alluding to had to do more with the acquisition of the various real estate or the various governmental types of situations that they had to get into. Those types of things are not hurdles for us at this point in time because this was A, first undeveloped land, and B, it was purchased all by one single entity, being our team. So we are very confident that this will be up and operational by April 2017, and we have an extreme level of optimism on the plan that we have been rolling out from day one, and this is a continued transparency of that plan and starting to show some of the images behind the words that we've been using to describe what we're doing.
Obviously, access is a huge issue, and the traffic study came out recently that the Braves had commissioned. What would you say to somebody who says, look, you start putting tens of thousands of people into that area around that interchange in Cobb County, and no matter what your improvements are, there's no way that you can avoid the kind of backups that we see around the connector, for instance, in Turner Field, which is also a major highway?
One of the unique aspects of this site is that Cobb County and the federal government had already planned on doing a number of different transportation-related initiatives around this area, some of which are on the interchanges and the highways, including a managed lane system, some of which are Cobb County initiatives and have to do with the widening of 41 and other access ways. There's also a diverging diamond that's being put in at Windy Hill. Some of those things, most of those things, were planned in advance of this, and those all create even better access to the site than previously existed. And again, the access is critically important. We go from a site that has 14 different ingress-egress points in this new ballpark, whereas at Turner Field, we had two. And then you also need to study where our fans might come from. And most of them come from areas that are north of, east of, west of, south of, so all 360 degrees of the ballpark, as opposed to Turner Field, where 85% of our fans come from the northern area. Coupling all those things together means we believe that during those 81 games, and remember, only about half of those are during the midweek, Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday timeframes, we believe that the traffic impacts are going to be minimal, and as a result of the development, they're going to be coming earlier, staying later, and dispersing that traffic that might be there.
Well, that was where I was going, because people might arrive at different times, but assuming a ball game is interesting enough to have everybody stay around to the end, everybody's leaving at once.
Well,
can you say there'll be no bottlenecks then?
That's not necessarily true. So part of the allure of a development is not only before the game, but also after the game. We can see people going to restaurants and bars after the game. We also think that there are going to be entertainment options that we're going to provide. So certainly there is a level of disbursement of traffic after the game as well as before the game. And a lot of those decisions, a lot of those opportunities are in exploration, but we are confident that the ingress-egress will be far superior to the way it exists here today at Turner Field.
Derek Schiller is Executive Vice President of the Atlanta Braves. Mr. Schiller, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.